I'm on a ski trip with my sons. And my son, my oldest son, just said, he said, what's happened with you, Dad, is a miracle.
Hey there. Welcome to the God's Goodness Podcast. We are your hosts, Josh and Shelley Hankins, and we're here to share real stories of God's power, stories of hope, healing, and miracles that will strengthen your faith. No matter what you're walking through, we want to remind you that God is good and He's still moving today. Let's dive in. Hey friends, welcome to another life-giving episode of the God's Goodness Podcast. We are your hosts, Josh and Shelley Hankins, and I hope you're ready because today's guest is a man whose life is a walking testimony of God's power to redeem, restore, and repurpose our pain into purpose. He's a world-renowned transformational coach, behavioral expert, and humanitarian, and the visionary behind Top Producers Global. He's trained Fortune 500 companies and the top 1% of leaders in real estate, finance, and business, and he's been featured on the Oprah Winfrey Network, international stages, and media outlets across the globe. But titles aside, what sets him apart is his heart. He's a man who has turned trauma into testimony. From battling adversity in his own life to helping the homeless, rehabilitating veterans with PTSD, and fighting child trafficking, he has made it his life's mission to serve those often forgotten. He's received the Humanitarian Award from the United Nations and the President's Lifetime Achievement Award from the Office of the U.S. Presidency at the White House, not just for his success, but for his service. He's also a knighted humanitarian, a devoted father, and a living, breathing reminder that when God gets a hold of your life, nothing is impossible. So lean in. This isn't just another interview. It's an encounter. So please help me welcome the incredible Sir Kaya Redford. Thank you for being with us, Kaya.
Thank you so much, Josh and Shelley, for both having me on your show and the amazing work that you're both doing in the world, spreading inspiration, love, and Jesus Christ's message to the world. So thank you so much. Such an honor to be here with both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure is ours.
So Kaya and I met through an event that Jen O'Donnell previously mentioned a few times in our podcast. I met Kaya at an event, and he was telling everybody a little bit about his story. And I was like, huh, that sounds something we would feature on our podcast. So I invited him on, and he said yes. So he's here with us, and he's going to start us off with the opening prayer, and then we'll get into it. So go ahead.
Thank you so much. As we gather here today, all of us, in Jesus Christ's name, living and fulfilling our mission, God's plan for us and God's plan for this earth, we thank all of you for tuning in, for choosing to be the best version of yourselves, to walk in the shoes of God and God's purpose for you. Thank you for Josh Shelley and Jen O'Donnell for making this great introduction. And let this conversation be guided in the way that God would have us be, so that we can learn His wisdom, His love, His light, and we can continue to spread that message of hope and peace and prosperity and happiness and love, most importantly, around the world. May we learn, may we grow, may we prosper, may we be happy, and may we live in God's image. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
So, Kaya, your story is one that is very inspirational. So Jesus took you from adversity to a success coach. So let's start with the adversity. So where would you like to start?
My start was meeting Bob Proctor. And I was probably in my mid-30s. I had watched the movie The Secret. I was very lost, very blocked, didn't know who I was, didn't know where I was going, had no purpose, no direction. And I meet this guy that's in this famous hit movie, hit DVD, which was based on the book The Secret, written by Rhonda Byrne. And when I met Bob, Bob saw something in me, and he was basically telling me that he saw something and saw greatness in me. And I didn't see any of that myself. And he said to me, he said, you create your experience of reality. You create your experience of reality. And I said, Bob, you don't even know what I've gone through. My dad was a workaholic. He was always gone. We traveled to, as a family, I'm the youngest of three kids. We were born in Omaha, Nebraska. We traveled to a country called Algeria in Northern Africa. And my mom's there with three kids. I'm the youngest of three. She doesn't speak the language. She doesn't know anybody. She has no support system, no structure. And my dad was gone for weeks, sometimes gone for months, or even if he was in the country at the time, he was gone to like midnight and so forth. So he was just never around. So, in the best attempt, I think he thought, you know, they always say your parents sometimes usually try to make the best plan. His best plan that he could think of was to hire people to keep us safe, right? So you're talking about, Shelly, your dogs keep the house safe, right? So he wanted to keep us safe. Unfortunately, he was a extremely poor judgment of character, and the people that he selected to watch over us while he was gone, a mother who doesn't drive, doesn't speak language, doesn't even know anybody, and three young kids who he picked were monsters. Or shall I say, they picked him. He was the target, and he fell hook, line, sinker into that manipulative game. So we went through a lot of trauma at a very young age. My sister and I, and my brother, who is a little bit older. We can get into that maybe as the interview goes on, maybe if we choose to, but went through a lot of trauma. All the things you would not want kids to go through at a very young age, the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the sexual abuse from crazy people. And somehow, some way, I survived the times. I'm in my now 20s and my 30s, and I meet Bob, this man who's tall, skinny, speaks like he was just an incredible, and he's no longer with us. Let rest in peace, Bob Proctor. And he spoke life into me. What I now know is that he was speaking Jesus into me, even though he didn't necessarily call it this for, in that context. But he was a very spiritual man. And he asked me, Kaya, do you have a dream? I said, I daydream all day long, every day, of having this other life that I don't have. What do you mean? Of course I. And I used to close my eyes and dream of having a career, having a life, having a purpose, being someone of value in this world, because at that time I felt like I was invisible, didn't really matter. And then he said to me the next profound thing. He said, Kaya, he said, you wouldn't have that dream. The dreams that you're dreaming about, the daydreams that you have, you wouldn't have that dream if you didn't have the capability of achieving that dream. And so I began to learn from him, the dreams I have are not just things that I want or wish for. There are things that God's bringing into my life that's showing me, this is what I want for you. It's choosing me as I'm choosing it. And then the next breakthrough he shared with me, he said, what do you want? What's the dream? So I started talking about a person, a man that has purpose and power and influence and that's able to have a great life and do good for people. And he said, Kai, I want you to write this down. I want you to know this one thing. He says, you don't get in life what you wish for, what you hope for, what you pray for. This is a big one. Even what you pray for, which is, I don't know. He says, you don't get in life what you wish for, what you hope for, what you pray for. He said, you get in life what you expect.
Sowing the seeds, what you think about, you bring
I
about.
had no confidence whatsoever in anything in this world because that trust and that confidence in people and life was pretty much shattered at a very young age.
Absolutely, understandably.
So you don't get in life what you wish for, you hope for, you pray for, you get in life what you expect. And that's when I began the journey of learning about the mind, the emotions, healing and transformation. And I went on a journey and he said, learn everything. In fact, I spent time at his house in Toronto, Canada. He had a library in his house with over 3,000 books just all laid out. So I started to learn everything I could. I learned about neuroscience. I learned about neuro-linguistic programming, which we'll talk about in a moment. I learned about timeline therapy, hypnosis. I had read the Bible. I read the Bible from cover to cover. I literally did everything I could to give me an answer or a solution to wake myself up. I felt like I was walking, but not really alive and awake, just existing, like numb.
Going with flow.
Going with, and I had my battles with hanging around with wrong people. I didn't even know that I had issues. I just knew that I was blocked, but I didn't really know. So I had my battles with drinking alcohol. My mom, actually, I didn't mention this. My mom, because my dad was gone so much, she got frustrated. And over time, she started to drink because she's got a huge amount of stress watching three kids in third world country, doesn't know anybody. And
isolation.
He's gone. Isolation, resentment, anger. So she starts drinking wine. Next thing, gin. And next thing, she becomes an alcoholic. So a lot of this stuff happened because my dad was gone, a workaholic, and my mom was an alcoholic. So that's how all this stuff happened. And she was just not mentally even there to be able to protect us at all. So I started to go through this transformation, learning from Bob, learning from the same people that Tony Robbins has learned from. Tony Robbins studied with Jim Rohn, and then he also studied with Richard Bandler, the founder of Richard Bandler and John Grinder, the founders of NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. So I went to the source, the founders, the creators of all these technologies. I also studied with Tad James, who's the founder and creator. He's no longer with us, rest in peace as well. Tad James, the founder and creator of Time Mind Therapy. So I never knew in a million years I was going to be a coach or anything. I just went to all those things to try to fix me. I know what Bob was saying. Bob was saying, you have greatness in you. And I couldn't understand what he was seeing because I didn't feel any of it. But as I went through the journey, he lit this fire. He lit this, ignited this little spark in me. And one day he says, I think you're ready. I said, ready for what, Bob? He says, I want you to put together a mastermind. I said, a mastermind? Bob, I stutter when I speak to people because I used to stutter. My first time meeting Bob in person was actually at LAX right after that secret had come out, and they were in the Radisson Hotel near LAX, and 500 people in the audience and him on stage, and they had just come off the Oprah Winfrey show, him and Reverend Michael Beckwith and Jack Canfield. They were like celebrities, right? And people are waiting in line to get an autograph from him. And I'm sitting in the audience thinking, these people are such idiots. This isn't Van Halen. This is not a rock concert. What do you guys, these are just speakers.
Yeah, why would you want their autograph? Why are you so excited?
Why are you so excited? And I had this insecurity and this chip on my shoulder. And I'm like, I'm not going to stand in a line like an idiot. But what I did is I waited till the line dissipated away, and I chatted with him briefly. And then he goes on stage and he's speaking on stage. And 20 minutes into his speech, he says, where's Kaya? And I'm like, oh, no, he's not. There's 500 freaking people in this room. And when you hear that name, Kaya, it's not Kyle, right? My name has got butchered like that. I call it butchered. So I knew it was me. So I'm mortified. I'm like, oh no, because I have a huge fear of public speaking. And so I sink my head in my hands and I'm hoping that he just thinks I'm not there. And the room seems like quiet for an eternity. And as I'm looking through the finger and I look to the stage, he's looking right at me. I'm like, oh. He says, Kaya, right? And I was like, I felt like I wanted to punch someone, probably him. And I'm like, because I couldn't say no what he's saying. He's calling my name out. He says, stand up. The next thing I'm standing up, I feel like I'm going to pass out because there's five. I am so self-conscious, so insecure. I feel like I'm going to pass out. And then he asked me a question, something about this program or whatever it was. And then I answered this question. To this day, I have no clue what I said. I don't even remember. It's a blur. I was numb the whole time. And the entire room of 500 people started to applaud. And that was my kind of first or second breakthrough with him, was realizing what just happened. I just got up and spoke in front of 500 people. Don't know what I said, but they applauded. And that began my journey. So I started to do the coaching. And then, as I mentioned, he said, you're ready. And I'm like, I'm ready for what? He says, put together a mastermind. I'm like, Bob, we've talked about this before. I stutter, so I don't know. He says, trust the process. So I trusted him. I put together a mastermind. I started teaching some of the things I was learning from him and from the other creators of founders of these tools, and weaving in some biblical things in there as well. And then one day I got a phone call from someone saying, is this Kaya? I says, Kaya. I said, who is this? They said, this person said, I'm from New York Life. I'm like, I have no idea what New York life is. What is that? And now I know it's a 190-year-old company. It's insured 16 U.S. presidents and one of the biggest life insurance companies in the world and one of the highest, most reputable ones. And this person said, do you have this young man called Gary in your mastermind? And you have a mastermind, right? I said, yes. And I said, yes, there's a young man called Gary, my mastermind. What is this about? And I feel like I'm in trouble. I feel like, what have I done wrong? I'm always looking for the bad news.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Why are you calling me? What am I doing bad here?
That's all you're used to.
That's all I'm used to. It's just bad news. Even though I'm fighting through those paradigms, as Bob would say. And he says, what exactly are you teaching him? So I'm like backing up even further. I'm like, am I in trouble? If I taught something I shouldn't have taught, what am I doing wrong here? He says, let me tell you, we were going to let him go 6 months ago. We were debating. He's a lovable guy. We kept him around, but we were going to let him go because he hasn't done any business. But in the last 7 weeks, he's brought in so much business. He's now number two in production we have 100 agents. So what exactly are you teaching him? Can we look at it and we consider having you come in and train the rest of the office? And I'm like, what? I've never trained a big company before. I remember the day going there. I'm literally sweating forehead, my palms. I'm still like fighting my own stuff, but I'm listening to Bob. I'm just taking that step, that courage, step of courage through the fear. And I did the training. Then I got a phone call 3 months after that from someone else saying, did you hear what happened to that office you trained? And of course, same reaction. Oh no, what went wrong? Still battling that. And that person said they had their biggest quarter in history. And now they're moving to become number one in the nation. So within a matter of probably a month or 2 months, I started to train all because they started calling me. This is the guy that trained the office that improved drastically in a short period of time, had their biggest quarter in history. So next year I trained a branch that went number one in the nation. Then what happened is all the financial service companies started calling. Then I had the real estate companies calling. Then within 2 years or so, I found myself training the number one Century 21 office in the world, Century 21 All-Stars. Number one offices out of 35,000 offices worldwide, and then training even the number one Century 21 agent in the history of the Century 21 system, Marty Rodriguez, the same woman that Tony Robbins, when he's on stage speaking to a real estate group, he always mentions her name. So we created a program, Top Producers Global. It used to be actually called Sales and Leadership Mastery back in the day, but it's the same program that's just evolved over time. And we have a one-day event and we have a 12-week intensive, and we're now in 25 cities, 6-7 different countries. Within the next couple of years, we'll probably be in every single country, in every single city. Got a bunch of different trainers. I don't know what this means to anybody else. I just know that no matter what we go through, that we can take that pain and that, yeah, we can turn that into a greater purpose. One of my mentors, her name is Marianne Williamson. She is well-studied. She talks about a book called A Course in Miracles as well, which is Christian in theme, just like the Bible. And she quotes the Bible all the time as well. She says, your pain and your suffering gives you a superpower. And that is, it gives you the ability to have X-ray vision into the pain and suffering of other people.
Absolutely.
So I feel like that's been the higher purpose for the past. And it's brought me to here, and it's brought me to you, beautiful, amazing lights, Josh and Shelley, both of you.
Thank you. At one point we discussed in the intro that you helped veterans with PTSD, and what you just said really reflects that you are helping in an area that you are very familiar with. Everybody has PTSD. It's just soldiers do these ones to pick on and find out. But everyone that has any kind of traumatic experience obviously has post-traumatic stress disorders.
Correct.
And I also like what Bob had told you about expectation, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not about, yes, prayer is effective when you expect what happens, right? Like the farmer that plants the field expecting the rain that he prayed for. But if he didn't plant that field, then what's going to happen? he's going to get that rain and
nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen. So he prepared. He expected it to rain. Like he said, hey, God, I would like this to rain. I'm praying for rain. And to show that I'm expecting that you're going to answer this, I'm going to go ahead and plant this field. Did you discover that you expected your success? Because you said you were like taken aback at first few times. Like, dude, not me. What did I do wrong? Like, when did you start expecting it and leaning into it? When did that healing take over?
That's a really great question, because I realized that, how would I put this, expectation for me, my experience of that teaching was not one where it happened to me. That's the, I guess, the next layer of the breakthrough. And I've never really thought about this. So fantastic, amazing question, Josh. You made me realize that expectation wasn't something that happened to me. It's something I had to choose. It's something I had to work on. So when I got involved in neuroscience and neuro-linguistic programming, and they really went into how the mind works and whatever, on a, by the way, in The Secret, they even talk about Dr. John DeMartini. He's quoted as saying, whatever you think about and think about, you bring about. So the attitude of gratitude, I started to realize that I had a belief system that expects nothing. I don't matter. No one cares. I went to, because of my challenges in childhood, as I went to school as a little kid, I had a lot of behavioral problems. So to reform me, they sent me to a boarding school. So I go to a boarding school, and then even there, I'm like abandoned. So I feel like I'm alone at 8 years old. I have no family around me. Now I'm in a boarding school. So because of all of this stuff and this, I had to undo all that programming. I had to let it all go. So one tool that I learned in neuroscience and in neurolinguistic programming is that when that belief comes up of limitation, I can't do it, I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy, not deserving, or whatever, I learned that I had to take ownership of that. That's not happening to me, that on some level, I'm choosing to believe that. So what I did is I learned how to just grab it,
capture
in my mind side, capture it. And then I would take it and I would throw it and I would visualize, just people visualize the basketball going and the hoop basketball going out, right? Albert Einstein says your imagination is everything. So I would visualize grabbing that limiting belief and throwing it in the trash. And I had to do that, Josh and Shelley, I sometimes had to do that every single freaking day. Say, grab the negative thinking, throw in the trash, throw in the trash. And then the second tool that I got from that in the early time, this going, tying into what you just asked, Josh, is to ask a critical question that got me out of that mindset that I just trashed and got me into the positive. And that is, what do I want instead? So I would walk in front of the room and I would be like, you're going to forget what you're going to say, or you're not going to be good enough, or I'd have my own paradigms. Even one of the mostly highly sought after speakers in the world today, beloved Les Brown, who's a dear friend of mine, we've shared the stage many times together, even as great as he is, he says he had 14 years where he had his own imposter syndrome, because he didn't have the PhD, the college degree. He grew up and was labeled mentally, educably retarded. He was considered, they had a twin brother, and he was supposed to be the dumb twin. And then he ended up becoming the person that trains these Fortune 500 companies around the world and a celebrity. So just like he did, I felt I had that, who am I? I haven't built a company and sold it for $200 million like all these other gurus. What have I done? Why would anyone listen to me? So I realized, in answer to your question, that it was a choice. It's not like expectation just all of a sudden, a miracle happened and I started expecting great in life. I had to work on it every day. I had to delete the negative beliefs. I had to say, what do I want instead? And then after I go, what do I want instead? And I identify what I wanted instead, then I had to actually sit down and meditate and visualize that. And what Tony Robbins talks about is act as if. So imagine you wrote that book and you want to be that author. You want to speak like we love Mel Robbins, the 5 second rule, right? You want to be this incredible author and writer and speaker. Then you got to visualize that. In The Secret, Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, they tell the story of the chicken soup of the soul. And 200 million copies of that book that sold. I think the most highest grossing selling book and authors in the history of books is 200 million with Chickens Over the Soul. So they create the vision board and they visualize it, see ourselves, New York Times bestselling authors. So I found myself having to use, honestly, Joshua Shelley, every tool in the book to get myself out of negative mindset and to prime myself to see greater than me. And what's interesting, we'll talk about this when we get to it, it all eventually leads to the moment with me and God, which is a whole other breakthrough, which we'll get to when I gave my life to God. But I was for many years trying to do this myself, trying to use these tools to break through, to use the mind and neuroscience and the way the mind works and the way belief systems work. I was trying to use these tools and they were working. There's no question they were working. They were getting me results. They were helping me coach companies and get great results for them. But it was at a certain level. Everything changed when God came into the equation. That's when things drastically changed.
Hey there, listeners. A while back, I had a brutal 4-day headache while my body was fighting something that had taken over my house. My podcast coach, Jenalee Samuel from Java with Jen, commented on my post saying she wished she lived closer so she could stick one of her patches on me. I asked her what she was talking about. She sent me her podcast episode about LifeWaves X39 patches, and I had to check it out. These non-transdermal phototherapy patches use light-based technology to support wellness and energy. No drugs, no chemicals, just light. And get this, Kim Clement prophesied about future medical breakthroughs using light. While results vary, people are experiencing emotional testimonials of healing, pain relief, improving the quality of sleep, improving people's energy, and more. Even Josh is pain-free when he wears them. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Want to learn more? Check out the LifeWave info link in my About section. Of course, these patches aren't intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. But the stories speak for themselves. Now, back to the show.
So you had an event in your life, Yagurth, where you were lied to by the enemy and you labeled yourself off of this event. And you had to learn to unlearn the lie and expect something different and call out what you expected. Okay, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I love that you were still limited in that. No matter how great you became, you realized that you were not where you needed to be. Like there was still more you could attain.
And I was still in pain.
Yeah, yeah.
I was still drinking vodka. It was water. I was studying with Bob and embarrassed to admit it, but maybe shouldn't be because everyone's in a different place, a different journey. Someone maybe needs to hear this. I was doing recreational drugs. I was doing ecstasy on weekends. I was searching for this. I guess I was probably trying to escape, right, from myself. And I was destructive to myself. So while I'm achieving things, there's this thing called sabotage. That's the word. I was taking one or two steps forward towards this greatness, this not even great, this life of purpose and direction. And there was still this, you call it the enemy or the evil or the, there was still this darkness that was, would pull me back. I would take two steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, two steps back. And then what A Course in Miracles talks about is a lot about the ego. Then I had this ego, this highly insecure psyche that had to dress well and present this image of this perfect, squeaky, clean, perfect, motivational, whatever. I had this image of who I needed to be, and I didn't feel like it was even that yet. So I was battling even, I had not even accepted myself for me, for just being Kaya, for just being me. So
sure, I bet you blamed yourself for a lot. It wasn't your fault what happened as a child, but you took on certain other activities as a result of that trauma, and you certainly blamed yourself. And that's really 100%. Hard to get out of when you blame yourself. Right. We talk about you have to forgive your enemies, but unforgiveness for yourself is just as wicked.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the secret a couple of times, and that reminds me of a book, Feeling is the Secret. Is that the same kind of concept? Like a side note?
Feeling is the secret?
Yeah. Is that similar to the secret?
I'm not sure what feeling is the secret is. I know the secret very well.
Feeling is the secret. They talk about how you have to not only visualize you in the place you want, but also feel that feeling as if. So pairing the feeling with the visualization, because then it like puts that out into the ether, they say, and then that brings it in faster and easier. So I was just wondering if it was similar.
Absolutely. That's a lot what Shelley, what Bob taught. He talked about this infinite intelligence, the universal. He never referred to as Jesus. I think he sometimes maybe mentioned God here and there, but he was talking about the divine creativity that flows in us, as us, and through us. To me, that's God, that's Jesus. That's what it is. It's the light that comes in us and as through us. And then he says, you have to hold an intention in your mind and you have to repeat that, just like in the book, Think and Grow Rich, when Napoleon Hill talks about auto-suggest. Mm-hmm. What do you want? Say it every day, repeat it again and again. And then you visualize it and like you said, the feeling comes in, where Bob would say you impress that mental image in your unconscious mind. He always talked about your conscious mind and your unconscious mind. You keep repeating it, visualizing it, impressing that upon your unconscious mind to a point where this paradigm, going back, Josh, to what we talked about earlier, that expect, right? Mm-hmm. To where this, what you expect now becomes in alignment. The thing that got me really interested in NLP was this woman, when I was battling. This is where I went from Bob, and I had graduated from Bob's teaching, and I went into, we're still not at the God thing yet, but we're getting to God. The second step was Bob to NLP, and then from NLP to God. So getting into the second step, this woman said something very profound. She was teaching NLP, neuroscience and NLP. She said, if whatever you wish for, what you hope for, you pray for, if you've got these goals and these dreams that you want to achieve, she said, if that is this thing you want, but if your blueprint, your unconscious mind, your blueprint, your software is this, if this is not seamlessly aligned with this, you're going to take a couple steps forward, but you're going to take a couple steps back. You're going to do this thing called sabotage. That's when I realized I actually need to uncover what is all of this. What are these beliefs? What are these values? What are these strategies? What are these coping mechanisms? I have to stop running away from it, stop hiding away from it. Instead, actually get curious, put it all on paper, like literally. So I did a 26-step breakthrough. We actually have a process called a 26-step breakthrough. And the first 4 hours of it is literally what we call a detailed personal history. We're going from your moment you were born. Some people believe in before birth, so that's a whole other thing. There's certain cultures. In fact, what I learned in timeline therapy, when I learned it originally, there's more people alive today in the world that believe in past lives and genealogical lives than people that don't. So even though that's not a theme in Christianity, for other cultures and other religions, they believe in that. So everything we do honors and respects where whatever belief system or religion a person comes from, or even if they're not. So I started to go through the detailed personal history, and I started to put all these pieces together and systematically going to work on healing all of them. And it made a huge difference. But I think the self-love and the self-acceptance, none of that came until I developed that relationship with God. That's when my life changed. I was married with two sons. I had a Kaya Jr., my oldest son, Kaya Jr., who's now 26, and Timor, who's now 25. I couldn't handle the marriage. We won't get into all that, but just... there's a lot of history with a lot of things. And I left, and I left a void and a hole there. Both her and I are very close, very dear friends. We have the best relationship we could possibly ever have. No longer married, but as mother of our two sons. And everything worked out perfectly. But at that time when I walked, it was very difficult. So, and it was through getting this relationship with God that transformed my life. I guess what I'm realizing by having this chat with you is that all the tools that I learned with Bob and with neuroscience, neurolinguistic programming, all these success tools created the success created the training the companies to go number one, real estate, mortgage, financial services, network marketing, but it didn't heal me in the same way of me like loving myself and didn't really create the relationships. Once I gave my life to God, everything changed, like drastically changed.
It's like Plato's cave. You kept running 100%. To what was familiar to you, and loneliness was familiar to you. Hurt was familiar to you. And so you would easily, in my mind's eye, escape that to run. Mm-hmm. I have a healthy family. I can't have that. I don't deserve that. And so you would run from that.
Sabotage.
Every chance. Yeah, sabotage, 100% self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. I think that's even harder to find God when you're self-sabotaging yourself. So how did he present himself to you in a way that you were like, I believe
this was a big moment. I, like I said, I had created this success in my life, but I didn't feel successful at all. I helped companies go number one in the world. And I would say probably made quite good money. I didn't feel like I was successful, or I didn't feel it.
There was still something missing.
The results were there, but I didn't feel fulfilled and happy in that process. The moment happened where, long story short, because I constantly learning and growing, and I went and took an assessment. I've taken probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 to 40 different assessments at this point. And in the assessment, it says, what is your archetype? You're either a creator, or you're a star, or you're a supporter, or you're a deal maker, or trader, accumulator, or lord, or mechanic. It's all around a box, right? There's a box, and there's eight different, three on the top, two in the middle, and three on the bottom, archetypes. And it says, you're in this category called star. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? I don't even know what that means. And it said, these are the people that are in your category. Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, Tony Robbins, David Beckham, Beyonce Knowles, Arnold Schwarzenegger. These are the people that have that archetype who are famous in their different fields. And it highlighted Oprah Winfrey. It said, Oprah has probably more wealth than many of the stars that even come on our show. So what does she do? Because the whole purpose of that assessment is to create your wealth and your freedom. What is your path to this, your wealth and your freedom? So I'm reading about her and I'm like, oh, her story is interesting. Honestly, I was never had anything against Oprah. I just never watched her show, never really took an interest. She's just another billionaire and good for her. But I'm now reading this report and it says, study her. And then I felt like I wasn't feeling her from reading her story. I didn't fully feel her. So I went on YouTube because I never really watched her shows. And I start watching some of her speeches and thinking, let me absorb what this woman's mindset is. And let me feel through her words and through seeing her speak, if I can feel something. And I came across this video that totally changed my life. She was speaking in front of Essence magazine. There were thousands of people in the room. You could see the camera panning and she's got her outfit on and she's walking on stage and she says to the entire room, she says, you can be anything you want to be. She says, you can do anything you want to do. You can have it all. And I'm like, okay, I'm listening. She said, but you're asking the wrong question. What question am I asking, Oprah? That's the wrong question. She had me. I'm like, oh, I'm really curious on this one.
Yeah.
Me, I put myself in the audience and like, I'm asking, we're all asking, what's the wrong question, Oprah? She says, you're asking for what you want. And I'm like, yeah, ain't that what we're supposed to be doing? We're supposed to be asking what we want. Everyone's asking, what do I want? In fact, I've discovered over the years, there are even seminars where they have the what do you want exercise, which actually goes something like this. What do you want? 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 They get in your face. What do you want? What do you want? So then eventually, I don't know. I wanted it. And then eventually it just comes out, right? So she's saying, you're asking for what you want. She says, what you should be asking is what does your creator want for you?
That's a wow.
What? I'm like, huh? So my mind just goes on fire. What does my creator want for me? I don't have a clue. I don't even have a relationship, even though I had been baptized. I was Christian and I had been baptized probably 9 years prior, but it was like just going through the motion. Oh, it's a good thing to do. Jesus, this is a good thing. This is, let me just, yes, it's the right, it's beautiful. And
it's the next
just
step.
Go through. That was my experience in my baptismal back, right? Mm-hmm. Back in the day. And ask what your creator wants for you. And I'm like, I'm not even really, who's the creator? Okay, Jesus. Okay, got it. What's my creator want for me? And I realized, Kaya, my voice in my head, you don't have any relationship with your creator. What are you even talking about? You can't even answer that question. You haven't been to church in years. You haven't read the Bible in years, even though you read it cover to cover twice. You're not even walking that life. And if that's the piece you're missing, you're, and I had a word that we would not be appropriate to use here, and I won't use it, but you're pretty much.
Got it.
Got it. You're pretty much. So then I just paused and I said, I got to fix this, because I just found a enormous, enormous blind spot.
Yeah, and you didn't know what you were missing.
What if this is the reason why I've been on the painful journey of creating successful companies and doing all this stuff, but feeling like empty, like worthless still through the whole thing.
Yeah. You had purpose, like, but you didn't know the purpose giver.
That's the next layer that's coming. That was big. Realizing that God was always there. That's the epiphany at the end of it. God was always there. Even when I had no clue that I was being led by God, I was being led by God the whole entire time. The only person that did not know it was me.
We're often the last ones to figure it out.
So then I go, okay, I need a mentor. And then I thought, okay, I know someone in politics, okay, who could help me, who's very, and I know this church and I know this and I know this church and I've been to several different denomination of Christian churches. I know Reverend Michael Beckwith at Agape, who's a little bit more new age, different. And I know, then I thought Joel Osteen, I rested on Joel Osteen. Okay, maybe Joel. He's like motivational speaking and Christian. And that's when I got this little silent little voice in my head saying, you've read the Bible twice. You can do that more, which of course we get to never stop learning and reading the Bible. And then I got another voice where there was that other book that you couldn't handle it. You had read it a little bit and you stopped, A Course in Miracles. So I just had this little voice that came in and said, go back to studying the words of Jesus, go back and studying everything you can about that. And then probably within a day or two, I got an audiobook and I'm listening. I skipped a big piece of this whole thing. I had went through open heart surgery.
Yeah, that's the big piece you skipped. Yeah.
That's a big piece. You can actually still see.
Oh, yeah.
The scar here.
Yep. Seen many of those in my career.
And this brought me, this was the, I guess, here's one thing. I wish it wasn't this way, but I think it often is this way, is that sometimes we need to be, for lack of a better term, challenged, in a nice way of saying it, more like crippled, challenged or crippled by life so harshly for us to finally surrender and realize that our way doesn't work. So that's what did.
We don't realize we need Jesus until we're put in a position where we need Jesus.
We didn't need Jesus. I couldn't rely on me. I couldn't rely on that guy anymore, that guy, that success coach, that this guy, because he is now on the verge of potential death going through open heart surgery. And I went through a lot of pain and through that. And so I really felt like I had no choice. So when I started studying, I started the Bible again and weaving and reading a little bit on A Course in Miracles as well. One of the biggest quotes that hit me is that if you want to know God, the only way you get to know God, that's what the Course taught me, is you get to know your brother and your sister, because God is in your brother and sister. And what I realized is that I, because of my trauma from very young age, even though I help people and coach people, never really let them into me, but me, the coach, but never into me. So there was always this level of separation between me and everybody.
Sure.
And the Course in Miracles, like, I felt nailed me to the cross. I felt it called me out. It says, you don't trust anybody. You think of people as this way. You think of people that way. And you'll never get to know me and God unless you get to know your brother and sister. And then if a man asks you for this, give him your shirt and your other shirt. Give him. It started shifting the way I thought. And the moment when the decision was made, had not been fully made yet, but the moment the decision was made was when the Course said to me, if you could just give up the grandiosity of your ego, we know why you have the ego, to protect you. You went through what you went through. So you had to create a persona that everything's okay to keep you, to get you to survive those times. It said, if you could just give up the grandiosity of that ego, then you could step into the grandeur of God.
Yeah, we all wear masks and we don't like to take them off because we're afraid someone won't love the person on the other side of it, that we enjoy the love they're giving the mask. And so it's really hard to put our defenses down. And you learn the hard way that only the people you trust can hurt you. And that makes it even harder to trust a father figure like God. And our relationship with our earthly father, I believe, directly correlates with our heavenly father. Mm-hmm. Oh, you see an absentee father that's working and you believe God works. So this is a very viable thought process for you. And then you're on a self-destructive, and then you have found something that works, that gave you success, that gave people to like you, and you hid behind it. And God is really good at humbling us in those moments. I'm so glad he did that for you.
And Josh, the way you just broke that down was perfect. That is exactly the best sort of summary of what happened there. And then that moment when it said, if you could give it the grandiosity of your ego, and it goes in depth and describes what the ego is, your separated self, the little boy, the little girl that feels isolated, alone in a dark world where everyone's your enemy, everyone's out to get something from you. And the only way you can keep yourself safe is actually, it says the only way you can keep yourself safe from anyone else is actually attack them. And I'm like, what? Then I started seeing all the ways that I attack, I judge, I criticize, I condemn, I see the worst in people, right? But they don't know it because I keep it to myself. So I started to see all these negative thoughts, and that the only way you could let go of the grandiosity of your ego and step into the grandeur of God. And in that moment, I remember like it was yesterday, I said to myself, back to the word that I'm not going to use here in the interview. I'm in this position in life right now. I'm barely got through this open heart surgery. I'm having pinching pain. Like, I feel like I could die at any time. My relationships are complete turmoil. I'm training the number one offices, but now I can't even do that because I can't even breathe, can't even talk because I'm in recovery of the surgery. So I can't even do my life's purpose, whatever that is at that time. And I remember in that moment, I made a decision that you have absolutely, what you're doing, Kai, is not working. You might as well just scrap all of it and just do God's way because you have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. You can't get in a worse position than you currently are. A strange relationship with your own kids, still issues with your kid's mom, can't speak, breathe, talk, do anything, can't support yourself, don't know if you're going to even make it through tomorrow because now you are high risk. So you got no choice, or you have no choice, but you have a choice. So I just chose. And then I started to study, reading the Bible, reading A Course in Miracles every single day. I started to study. All I did is fully immerse myself, and I went on a healing journey. And then what's really interesting is probably within 3-4 months, I got my strength back. I started to speak again, even though I struggled a little bit with my breathing because it's a very traumatic surgery, open heart surgery. Even the doctor, Dr. Robin Cohen, he says it's a very invasive surgery. That surgery gave me PTSD. I already had PTSD, but that surgery for sure gave me PTSD because running through the emergency room every day, this pinching pain, that pinching pain, thinking something's going to happen. So 3 months later, giving my life to God, studying the Bible, studying A Course in Miracles every single day, I started to get subtle comments from people. You're different. I've been watching you. This is a different you. Can we go to lunch or can we meet or whatever? People started to open up to me in a way that they had not done before. I had no clue what was happening. I was opening up. My, ironically, open heart surgery. Open heart surgery. My heart was closed. My heart was broken, as they say. I would say that's what I felt it was at that time. And I started opening my heart, not fully realizing the impact it was having on other people. And then even people that worked with me, you run a company, things happen, problems happen all the time. It's not what happens. It's how you react to it. Do you respond? Do you react? The old me would go in a flight of rage. Blah, 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 blah. And that's what led to the open heart surgery, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. That's how I got there in the first place. The new me would say something very different, would say, it'll be okay. God has a plan. What? God? You just said God has a plan. That's your plan. That's what you just said. I would think God has a plan. I'm going to let go, let God, let go, let God. And just, I open up my heart. And then the people that work with me, one of them is AJ, I think it was AJ, and some other people said, you have completely changed in a matter of 6 months. You're really not the same person anymore. Then I realize my sons, where I was with my own sons, which was this very disconnected relationship, even though birthdays and this and that, and they love me and I love them, but it was very separate, disconnected relationship. I actually put in time. It just changed everything. My relationship with my sons and respect and love for their mom and supporting her on her journey became a priority. My relationships with my partner, her kids, like a blended family, like my relationships became the priority. And I didn't need to go search for the next company to go number one and millions and millions. I kept contributing, but even the way I talked was different. I started to speak about that, right? Mm-hmm. The pure essence, the love, the light. I wouldn't necessarily call it Jesus, because in our academy, we are, if I'm a pastor, 100%. And the God of my understanding is Jesus and is Christianity, 100%. That being said, when I coach and I train companies and so forth, we make sure that anybody of any different religion or faith belief feels seen, heard, understood on the level of what they have said. But I started to come from this spiritual place. My relationships transformed. And then the moment was when actually, for probably a while back, I'm on a ski trip with my sons. And my son, my oldest son, just said, he said, what's happened with you, Dad, is a miracle. I'm like, huh? He said, who you used to be, who you are today, you have literally done a 300, he's not the person to compliment. That's just not him. He's not the overly complimentary person. That's not his personality type. He's a shoot straight type of person, can kind of lay it on pretty thick, very direct, and can't be confrontational, right? And he said, you've done a complete 360. And now I have a very close relationship with my oldest son, Kaya. Great relationship with my son, Timur. Have an incredibly loving, respectful relationship with their mom, Rosemary. Have a great company. Now we have 15, 20 people we have this connection. Everything has changed. And now, ironically, having gone through the open heart surgery, I'm doing things physically today that I play rugby on Sundays on the beach. I go skiing, snowboarding down black diamonds, double black diamonds. I swim around in a 55-degree ocean. I do the whole superhuman protocol that Gary Brechter, Dr. Peter Attia. I have a longevity program beyond just these two. Everything's changed. And I can only give this to God. And I'll give myself one piece of credit for me choosing. Because in the Course of Miracles, it talks about in the Bible, sometimes you read a passage where it says, only a few are chosen. Only a few people get to be Moses or this person or that person. In the Course of Miracles, has an interesting thing, and it's not that it's saying it's true or not, it's just an invitation. It's saying actually everyone's chosen, but very few people choose. We're all chosen to be God's children. We're all chosen. We're all good enough. Tony Robbins says you're all good enough the moment when he gets in front of a seminar of 9,000 people. And I was there with my team once, and he said, you know what your problem is? And this is to 9,000 people. He says, your problem is you don't believe you're good enough. I got, just be honest, I love Tony. Tony's like the best thing that's ever happened to neurolinguistic programming. He's created more exposure to neuroscience than that in the success coaching world than anybody else. So I have much respect for him. But honestly, when he said that, I got triggered. I got triggered because who the heck do you think you are? It's 9,000 freaking people here. You don't know everyone. You don't know me. Isn't Oprah somewhere in the front row? Like, you're saying she doesn't believe she's going to? Like, how could you say that? I had this little thing. And then when I left, I realized he's probably right about 95 to 98% of the people. And I went, oh my gosh, that's why he says it. That's why he says it. And so when the course talks about very few, everyone's chosen, but very few people choose, I think it's this imposter syndrome that we have that, thank God I broke through. So I give it all credit to God with a small little pat on my back, because most people in my situation, I think, would have given up. A coach long time ago said people that have gone through what you've gone through sometimes are drug addicts. They wind up in jail. They wind up dead. You've taken all of this stuff and you've transformed it into, you've transformed it, taken it as your fuel.
Romans 8:28, God worked it all for your good.
And that goes to the final point there. As I look back my life and feel I have so disconnected from God all those years. And have you ever heard the story they say about someone who, hurricane was coming and the water flooded everything and a person drowned. He comes to the pearly gates of heaven. God, why didn't you save me? And God's, what do you mean, why didn't I save you? I freaking got the announcer to broadcast it to the city. The hurricane's coming. Get out of town. Then I sent the guy on the boat when the water started to come up and literally cover the whole city and now up to the first floor and now the second floor of your building. And the guy on the boat trying to say, get in the boat, get in the boat. You still didn't get in the boat. Then you go to the roof and the water's gone to the roof and you're about to drown. Everyone else has already drowned or they're saved. The helicopter comes with a freaking rope saying, grab the rope. We're trying to save you, but you still didn't grab the rope. I came to you all this time. I feel like that. I feel like God's been there this whole entire time. It just took me that long to figure out that it was God. And I'm comforted in that.
Yeah, I had a similar experience where every time I would mess up, every time I did something wrong, I would ask God, if only he had been in my life sooner, I wouldn't have made that mistake. Mm-hmm. I would have been a better husband, a better father, a better son, a better employee. And after about 2 years of doing that on and off, as I messed up, he finally revealed to me every place, including birth, where he was, and I rejected him. And that was a very humbling experience to say, oh, you were there, and I said no. And oh, you were there, and I said no. And it was never on him. It was always on me. I was the slow learner. And also, I love in the beginning when you said that you had these dreams and you correlated it to God's purpose for you. It's almost like he was giving you like a test run or gave you like a saddle to say, hey, buckle up, because this is what your life is going to look like if you lean into me.
What's really bizarre, I very rarely share this because it was just one of these daydreams in my, I guess, 20s. When I would daydream, and I knew that I was lost. I was fully aware that I'm missing something. I had a traumatic fall when I was 3 years old from a two-story building while living in Algeria, while no one was watching me, that landed on solid concrete, shattered my part of my skull, my face, bleeding. I was completely unconscious. They thought I was dead. Long story short, brain damage. I had to repeat first grade. So I always felt like I was dumb or slow or this or that, and especially since I had that fall and the brain damage, I just lost my train of thought, but went into that thing. What was the last thing you were just saying, Josh?
About how you were having the dreams and God was giving you the purpose.
Oh,
it's
the dreams.
Kind of like a saddle to like, hey, buckle up, because this is what your life is going to look like.
one of the dreams I had, thank you for reminding me, one of the dreams I had, and it's just a weird daydream. It's almost like you're asleep. You're dreaming about something that doesn't make any sense. I would dream of Danny DeVito looking short, robust looking guy that would meet me somewhere and would say, you. Like, I had this thing of you. And I'm like, who? You. So the idea of someone coming into my life and seeing me and saying, I see you and I'm going to help you. I'm going to wake you up. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to transform. So I had that dream. It just made no sense to me. Years later, having given my life to God, having gone through the transformation, doing all the things that I've been blessed to create, then I get a phone call to be honored with as a knight in the Royal Order of Constantine the Great in St. Helens. So Emperor Constantine, the first emperor that brought Christianity to Rome, and St. Helen, his mom. So it was just really surreal because I'm sitting there. We got Prince Rafael of Spain and his entourage that's flown out. We're at the Venetian Las Vegas. There's 500 people there. And I'm kneeling on this thing and he's got this sword. And it's not exactly the dream when I was daydreaming in my 20s, but it's a kind of a, I don't know how to put it. It's a kind of a completion of that or a fulfillment of that part of the dream of arrived saying you. And in the video, he says, may God bless you. May God hold you. May God help you. May God this. So the anointing, it was like an anointing. And then I did a video and they all loved it because most people think, okay, I got knighted. It's like, oh, I'm a knight.
It does sound pretty cool. I'm not going to lie.
it sounds and it does feel cool. But my experience of it was very different than you've accomplished this and now you're a knight. I'm like, none of that is, I'm not diminishing it. Just what I felt the moment I was knighted, it was not about the past or any accomplishments in the past. I felt this visceral experience of God saying, this is your purpose moving forward. This is, what does knighting mean? Knighting means going out there. And I love your cross on your, in fact, if I can show you.
Is that the one he knighted you with then?
That's, yes.
Awesome.
So we got knighted and just, it was a call to serve. And since it's a royal order, it's Christian. It's just these little things, these little messages. I feel like just the whole entire time I've just been guided by a higher purpose, a higher meaning. And
sure. Yeah, that's,
and it's a beautiful thing.
That's pretty awesome. I don't know much about modern day knights, but I remember being regaled by the stories as a kid and you learn about knights and defenders of the people, defenders of the innocent, defenders of the weak. And granted, when you read actual history, that's not what they all turned out to be because they're just people.
Correct.
But the romance side of it, the fantasy side of it always was very appealing. And I think most of us have that ingrained in our minds of what a knight should be. And I think God was running with that for you. This is what I want from you. I want you to have that idealistic knighthood. I want you to use that to speak to people for me on behalf of them and to defend them and to help them through their struggles because we all need help up.
100%. Yeah, I felt God was in that room. It was the Prince Rafael of Spain was doing it, but I thought it was just really a thing between, it was just me and God at that moment. I felt it was very sacred. And I think going back to the suffering, the superpower, I feel that is, if I call it a superpower, that I feel it is granted me is wanting to help people that are suffering. I've always, because I suffered so much as a kid, and that's where I get the most value from. That's where I get the most in my heart, warms my heart more than anything. Is to help someone have a miracle. The Course in Miracles talks about a miracle is an act of love. I know that there's miracles in the Bible that are raising people from the dead, walking water. They're like very transcendent, transcending type of things that most people think of. I can't do that. Jesus could do that, but I can't do that. Course in Miracles just talks about a miracle as being an act of love, transmuting something that which is from fear into love. And it talks about miracles are natural and should be happening every single day, especially if you know it as an act of love. And it also says when a miracle is not happening, something's gone wrong in your world or in the universe.
Wow, what a testimony. From trauma to transformation, Kaya's story is already lighting a fire. But trust me, part two takes it even deeper. Next week, Kaya shares the one lie he believed about himself that was sabotaging everything. His confidence, his relationships, even his calling. And it's a lie most of us are still carrying. You'll hear how God exposed it, rewrote it, and unleashed a breakthrough so powerful it infused Kaya with a boldness he never thought possible. You don't want to miss this. Hit follow, stay tuned, and remember, your identity isn't found in your past. It's found in God's presence. See you in part two. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Listen, let's stay connected. Come follow us on all the socials at God's Goodness Podcast, where you can find the latest and say, hey, it's a really great way to stay in touch. Many of you have asked how you can support the show. You can make donations through any of the links in the About section, or of course, by praying for us, as well as sharing, rating, and reviewing on social media and iTunes. Your heartfelt feedback always reminds us why we do this. Until next time, remember, God is always working, miracles are real, and your breakthrough could be just around the corner. Keep believing, keep expecting, and don't forget to share this with someone who needs hope today. We'll talk to you next week.